pounds. They're possibly up. O'Reilly sent a few so we could raffle them off during the day. And I also do mentoring and consulting, which is how I fund my book writing habit. And one of the things I'm going to raffle off today is an hour of my time. And that's for, and in mostly for entity framework topics. Thank you very much. So that's just a little bit about us. Oh, my God. I didn't know you put the little sound on there, too.
It's more authentic if you don't see it coming.
He didn't tell me about that. So we're going to fire. We're all fired up. Yeah, we've got fiery hair. So here's the schedule today. Of course, we're starting a little behind, so I'm going to just short. My goal is I'll just do the first thing a little more quickly, which is just an overview intro anyway. So each of the sessions are an hour long. We've got 15-minute breaks in between each, and we'll take an hour for lunch. And thank you, Microsoft, not only for hosting here, but they're feeding us today. So I think lunch is, what, peanuts and soda, peanuts and Pepsi or something like that? Probably pizza, right? The way this is going to work is I'm going to do just a real overview, especially designed for people who've been going, I don't know about Entity Framework yet. I love my data sets. What's going on? Why is Microsoft doing this to me? So that's kind of what the first bit is about this morning. And then Steve is going to go through some of the great new features in Entity Framework 4. Because they really define Entity Framework in a lot of ways now, so beyond some of the basics that I'm going to show you. And also, that'll be really great for people who've been using Entity Framework already. How many people here have never even touched Entity Framework and really haven't looked very much at any of the documentation or anything? Okay. How many people here have used Entity Framework 3.5 or version 1 but not moved to 4 yet? Okay, and how many people are playing with or even using Entity Framework 4 now? Great, okay. That's good to know. So after that, Rachel is going to spend some time showing a lot of the great new RAD things that you can do with Entity Framework, RAD UI design, like I don't know if you're going to be doing some WPF. There's so many drag and drop capabilities, so if you're just doing some quick applications without architecting some big enterprise. There's a lot of power there. There's a lot of integration in Visual Studio 2.10. Lunch, and then I'm going to spend an hour going over the basic POCO support, which I think is one of the really most important things that's been added to Entity Framework 4 that enables us to do so much more architecturally. And then talk about working with disconnected applications, so ASP.NET, web services, WCF services, things like that. And then finally, Steve and I are going to have some fun at the end talking about how all of these things we've been learning about really enable us to architect better applications using Entity Framework 4. We're going to look at repositories and unit testing and things like that, the things that we're able to do now. So that's a look at the day. And just, again, thanks very much to Microsoft for hosting this and also for providing lunch. We love free food. Free lunch, not a lot of places for that. And then I'll go ahead and get started. So I'm Julie, and that's just a little bit more about me. So you'll have these slides. I'll post these slides probably on SlideShare. So you'll have access to all this information after the fact. So here's the big question people are always asking. Why Entity Framework? Why did Microsoft give us another data access tool? Are they changing our whole world again? So in deep, dark history, like 8 years ago, right? Way, 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 way in prehistoric times of programming, we had DAO and then that blip of RDO. Did anybody actually waste time learning RDO? Oh, that's too bad. And then, you had to forget it 3 months later, right? So Microsoft, unfortunately, has had the, we've got this vision of having a little bit of a history with them kind of ripping the rug out from under us when it comes to data access. But things have really stabilized. We did finally, we got with VB6 era, we got ADO, we moved into ADO and record sets. And then with .NET, that shifted again into data sets. And there was some bridges from record sets. Some of the conceptual things were still the same. But since we got data sets in the ADO.NET, when that started, all that's done is actually evolved, right? They haven't taken that away and replaced it with anything new. They've just enhanced it. But they really did hit a wall, a brick wall. There really wasn't much more that they could do with data. And, so wasn't much more they could do with the ADO.NET to make it better, to make data sets better. They worked really, really, they rebuilt the engine in ADO.NET too, so things got a lot more efficient. And then they were just tweaking it and giving us a couple more tools, things here and there. There really wasn't much more they could do after that. And looking around, they saw that, what a lot of developers were doing and third parties were starting to write object relational mappers, right? So making it, what can we do to make data access easier? And this was really the next thing, object relational mappers, where people were trying to remove all of that redundant code that we have to write going from the database to our objects and our objects back to the database. So the ORMs were taking care of that for us. So Microsoft started working on something to address ORMs as well. Does anybody remember the blip of object spaces that was unfortunately never released? So when they announced Entity Framework in 2006, a lot of people just kind of rolled their eyes, and a lot of people did not believe that it was actually going to get released. But actually what was happening is Microsoft made a huge investment internally in it, not just the Entity Framework, but the basis of it, which is the Entity Data Model. Entity Data Model is being used throughout Microsoft, a lot of their technologies, and some of their technologies that are written with .NET and dependent on .NET are using Entity Framework within there. So they've made a huge investment in Entity Framework and are telling us that, this is where all their bets are. And if you start taking a close look at all of any documentation, samples, things like that that Microsoft's putting out, they're all using Entity Framework now. They're not, and they're not throwing away the data sets, but they're not using that as their examples, their demos. They really just want to have people see Entity Framework. So now that everything's moving towards Entity Framework, the big question is, what about data sets? What about linked to SQL? Do you have a question? Okay, so I'll get there in a minute. So the first thing I want to do before I do that is just take a look at, as an object relational mapper, all these other ORMs are out there. Why is Microsoft, why is Microsoft doing it, and what's different about theirs than some of the others that are out there? So one of the big differences is that a typical ORM maps directly between the objects in your application, in your domain, and the database. So the objects are just a representation of your tables in your database and your columns. So you're still coding against structurally, you're schematically, you're coding against your database all the time, and you're kind of stuck with, in a lot of ways, stuck with that schema with your objects. And what Entity Framework does with the Entity Data Model, which is underneath, is they start with a conceptual model. So this is potentially your objects. You might use the objects that come from this conceptual model directly in your I just want to say I'm probably not going to make the run all the way over there to point at the screen for you guys. Is that cool? You can follow me? You just, where I go left, you go right? So we work with objects that come from a conceptual model. We also have this metadata that describes what's in the database. Okay? And then in between, there's a mapping layer. So what happens is we don't have to have our conceptual model that is that our objects in our application, or they might be a stepping stone. If you have a really separated application, you might have another set of objects if you're building DTOs or something like that. But this is what this allows is, rather than being stuck with the objects that look like your database, you can really make these objects look more like your domain. your what you need in your application, and then use the mapping to let Entity Framework figure out how to get from how your objects are defined, what the structure of your objects is, back to the database, back and forth, whether you're doing queries or doing updates. So that's it. That's actually a pretty big difference. Link to SQL is more like this. Link to SQL is essentially a one-to-one mapping, right? In here, you can restructure your, you can reshape your entities. You could have inheritance in there. You can have an entity that maps to multiple tables, or you can have multiple entities that map to one table. In other words, you could break a table up. So maybe you've got a table with photos in it, right? And you, every, when you get the entity, the main entity, like the employee, you don't always want to pull that photo information back across the wire every time you're querying that entity. So you could split that table up into multiple entities and say, oh, just get the, you know, this part of the table. Now, now for this person, I want to go and stream that huge bit of information back with a photo. So you can do all kinds of creative stuff in there. And there's a lot you can do with the mapping. In, when you're working in Visual Studio at design time, you're going to be working with something called an EDMX file. And it's an XML file that contains all three of these pieces, these, all three of these schemas. So we refer to them all together as the metadata. So this here is the model that you actually work with. The conceptual model is what you actually work with in your application. But when you're writing your application, you'll be working against the whole one contained file that's the EDMX file. It also has some designer layout information in it also, so you don't need to deal with that if you're when you're using the designer. You're just using a user interface. So this is what you'll work with when you're in Visual Studio. But at runtime, Entity Framework works specifically with the three schema files, the metadata files. And throughout the day, you'll be seeing all this come to how this all works out. So here, you know, the big question is about, well, what about all of these other tools we've been using inside of Visual Studio, inside of .NET? Data sets, who's working with data sets currently? I've certainly got lots of applications with data sets in them. Data sets are not going away. They're just not changing. So they're, you know, they're just like a snapshot. They're fixed now. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there will be a tweak once in a while. But as far as I know, the data sets will stay working exactly the way they work. They're not going to go away, but nothing new is going to happen to them. Link to SQL. So Link to SQL is not dead. It's living, a living plant. And every once in a while, Microsoft is going to come along and sprinkle a little water on it. In other words, make a little tweak here and there. But essentially, you know, Link to SQL is an ORM. Entity Framework is an ORM. It doesn't make sense for Microsoft to grow the two, especially when a lot of the requests for Link to SQL would make it are things that are already in or planned for Entity Framework, right? So then you get the whole Visual Basic C# thing happening again, right? And then you end up having, you know, parity between the two and constantly supporting the two. So Link to SQL is going to stay. It has its uses, right? It's a great, great little tool. You know, I think of it as little, certainly compared to Entity Framework. Entity Framework is a really huge API. And you know, if you're using SQL Server and you just need some, you know, quick throw together some kind of application with some simple needs, or some more complex needs, it's actually tools, additional tools. I think Eric Smith from CodeSmith wrote something. I can't remember what it's called. Rachel, do you remember what it is? Say it again. Plinko. There's something called Plinko that will create more complex classes for you so you could actually do even more with Link to SQL. But essentially, this is the story with Link to SQL. I know a lot of people think it's dead, but it's not dead in that it's being removed from .NET. It's not being, it has not been deprecated, and I don't know if or when that's going to happen. So when Microsoft officially says something is deprecated, like the day they say that, 10 years. It's 10, it's, that's, they say deprecated, that means, okay, in 10 years, it'll be gone. So that, you know, that clock certainly hasn't even started yet. So I'm not starting new applications with Link to SQL, but I do have some production apps with Link to SQL out there, and I'm just leaving them. They're fine. At some point, if I need to enhance them and Link to SQL isn't going to satisfy what I need, then I'll move them to Entity Framer. But for now, there's no reason for me to move them. Okay? Entity Framework is where Microsoft is sending all the gardeners, right? This is where all the investment is being made. And, you know, like I said, there's so much at Microsoft, not just what they're creating for .NET developers inside of .NET and Visual Studio, but in many, many other products in Microsoft, even some internal stuff that's going on. They're using Entity Data Model, they're using Entity Framework. So Microsoft is, you know, talk about dog fooding, right? This is going to be internal to a lot of important stuff there. So it's not going anywhere soon. So I've been talking about the model, the conceptual model. This is essentially what a model can look like. This is a screenshot of a model in the designer in Visual Studio 2010, in the Entity Data Model Designer. So it looks a little like objects. It looks a little like the database schema. But this is actually models. And you can see between the different entities, we have lines that represent the relationships between them. So, for example, between customer type and customer, I have a one-to-many. You see that there's like the little one and there's a little asterisk. And let's see if there's another one interesting. Between reservation and trip, there's a many to zero or one. So a trip can have one or more reservations, people going on a trip. And a reservation might have, this doesn't make sense, a reservation having no trips. Maybe they just said, here's some money for a future trip I might take someday, but we don't know which trip it's going to be, right? So we've kind of made a reservation. That's not really logical, but that's what that's telling me. It is either going to have zero trips related to it or one trip related to it, but it can't be any more than that. So that's what that relationship is defining here. Some other things to point out in here are, for example, we have foreign keys. So here's customer type up here, and down here we've got the customer type and ID in here. Now that foreign keys is new in Entity Framework 4. It's huge. You'll be seeing a lot more about them today. Down here we have navigation properties. So on the top we have the scalar properties, and in the bottom we have navigation properties. And those are related to these relationships that we have between the entities. And the navigation properties enable us, when we're using one of these entities, an entity instance, an object, we can navigate. It's how we get from one entity to another. So we don't have to write a join in order to say, I want to, you know, tell me the reservations for a customer. You can just say customer.reservations. If, you know, if you have the customer in hand, you can navigate to that customer's reservations by saying customer.reservations. So all of that is built in. And that's really for you know, us data set people, right, which I really was before using Entity Framework. I wasn't using any one of the other ORM tools. That's a really big deal. I mean, whether I'm querying, that's something you can leverage when you're writing queries and also when you're coding against object instances. So it's a really great thing to be able to have access to those navigation properties. So this is actually pretty simplistic. Here's one between equipment and activity over on the left where I have a many-to-many relationship. Now, in the database, there's a join table there. And there's a very specific scenario where you can have a many-to-many relationship and not have to have that join table represented as an entity. And that's when the join table has only the IDs, IDs that are in the entities that you're joining, the tables that you're joining. So we've got the two primary keys from the two entities. So my join table only has equipment ID and activity ID in it. So Entity Framework is able to kind of hide how those two are related, and then we at code, when we're coding against this many-to-many relationship, things are really, really easy. You don't have to worry about how to join things together. You can just say, if you have an activity, you can just add one piece of equipment to the equipment collection for that particular activity. You don't have to worry about navigating through that join entity and figuring out how all of that works out. So these are some things that are, to me, pretty interesting about a model. And I'll show you. I'm going to be opening up Visual Studio, and you can see how one of the ways of creating a model. Steve, I just want to ask you this. Are you going to be in your What's New talk, are you going to be demoing how to do a model first? How to create a model using model first? Okay, so that just helps me figure out what I'm going to do in a few minutes. Okay, so there's actually a couple of ways of creating models. Maybe we go the other way. Okay, so one way, how many people here use legacy databases? Like you're writing application against a database that already exists. Like that's probably most of us, right? So with the first version of Entity Framework, this is who Microsoft addressed, which left people like Steve out in the cold. Sorry. People of fortune, those fortunate, you know, those guys are really lucky. They get to do brand new stuff and brand new databases and applications all the time instead of getting stuck with legacy databases. So, you know, they just had to wait a little longer. So one way of creating a model is that we can point the wizard, the entity data model wizard, to an existing database and say, create a model from this database. So it reverse engineers the database, reads through the schema, and creates not just the model, but also all that backing metadata, the description of the store schema and the mapping that goes in between. And what you get from this, to begin with, is what I was talking about with the more typical ORMs. You're going to get essentially a snapshot of the database. So your model is going to look exactly like your database. But then you can customize it after that, right, if you want to. So you can take advantage of all those mapping opportunities that Entity Data Model gives you. But off the bat, when you first do it, you first do that reverse engineer, you're going to get something that looks exactly like the database. So that's one way to do it. And it's the most, I think it's more typically used. With the first version of Entity Framework, it was really all we could do. It was the only option available to us. Now we have another option in Entity Framework 4 called Model First. And this is interesting. This is really for people who are working with just everything's brand new, and they don't even have a legacy database to work with. And they probably are in the kind of company where you don't have database designers and DBAs, right? Like, they're just people who have a different perspective on what the purpose of a database is for, right? And I have a hard time with that, even though I love them and have a lot of respect for that way. I'm just such a database kind of oriented person you'll understand in a minute when I walk through the rest of this. So the way a model first works is you design the model right on the surface of your designer surface, and then Entity Framework can generate the database schema from that model. So I had to preface, because there are people who just have heart failures when they hear that. What do you mean you're just going to, like, automatically create the database schema, right? How many people does that upset? Any DBAs in here? Okay, so you understand why I kind of prefaced all that. Like, you can use the database first. It's okay. So actually, let me just show you quickly what these two look like. Oh, really, really good question. Thank you. There's so many millions of points to bring up. Entity Framework works, pardon me? Oh, yeah, thanks. The question was, that's SQL Server only, correct? And the answer is no. Entity Framework will work with any database for which you have a provider that knows how to use work with Entity Framework. And I say it in that funny way because Microsoft provides, in SQL Client, Microsoft Enhanced SQL, System.Data.SQL Client, so it knows how to use Entity Framework, right? So Microsoft and did SQL Server and also for SQL CE, right? So they support that. They're not writing the database providers for the other databases. Third parties are doing that. Oracle is still working on theirs. They finally made an announcement a few months ago. They're going to have, I think, betas out towards the end of this year and hopefully an RTM sometime in 2011. But there are two third parties who've written, put Entity Framework support into their Oracle providers. There's a Firebird provider that supports Entity Framework. MySQL supports Entity Framework. So there's a whole bunch of providers for the databases. And so the beauty is what we're going to do, what we do in Visual Studio and in .NET doesn't change even if you're using one of these other providers, because we're going to be focused on Entity Framework. We're going to be writing queries against the model, not against the database. So the queries will always look the same. And then Entity Framework, along with those mapping files, the schema, the store schema, and then some IP from those providers will take that link to Entity's query and convert it into, transform it into the appropriate query for that provider. So it's going to do two things. One, it's going to figure out, well, what are the table names and columns and real relationships in the database? Right, so we're querying against the database. It'll recreate it to be a database schema-based query, not one against the schema of the model. And then the provider will help by making sure it's in the correct syntax. Does that make sense? And that's a really important thing, so thanks for asking. I'm going to be working against SQL Server because that's what I've got on my computer. I don't happen to have an installation of Oracle. I've actually never used Oracle. So I'm just going to create a really, really simplistic project here, just so you can see what creating a model looks like. Now, normally, I'll put my model. Even if I have multiple models in my solution, each model I would put into its own project, into its own class library project. I'm just going to create this inside of a console app project in case I want to write a little code against it and I don't have to do extra work. So this is for demo purposes only. So I'm going to go ahead and add a new item to the project, and the new item will be, I'm going under Install Templates and picking ADO.NET Entity Data Model. I'm not going to rename anything. I'll just use the defaults for simplicity. So my options are generate from a database or start with an empty model. I'm going to generate from a database. So this is the database first, reverse engineering a database. And this is the demo that, you know, anybody's been watching anything to do with the Entity Framework for the last 4 years, you've probably seen it 180 times already. I'm just going to take whatever database it handed me immediately. It's reading the database. It's reading the database schema, and it's going to present me with all the tables it's found in there, all the views, and all the stored procedures. And what I'm going to do, just so it's not too overwhelming, I'm just going to choose a handful of tables. I'll choose one view. And I'll choose, there's no stored procedures in this particular one that I selected. Are you going to be showing some stored procedure stuff, Steve? I'm going to switch to a different database. So I just want you to see, because so many people say, what about the stored procedures? So let me just flip to another database and hope that I this time magically pick one that has a stored procedure in it. That one does. Okay, so again, it's reading the database schema, and it's going to present me with the tables, and I will just select a few of them so we can see what happens there. I will select a view. I'm going to do one with a V in front of it so we can see it more easily. And I will select 1, 2, 3. Remember that 3. Actually, I'll just select insert. 3 stored procedures. Okay? So I finish it, and now what it's doing is it's reading that schema and creating the conceptual model based on that schema, and then it's also creating that additional metadata, the description that it'll have. Now, the description of the database is only going to have descriptions of the things I chose from the database. It's not going to have everything that's in the database. The description of the database and then the mappings. Now, down on the bottom here, there's an error. Actually, it's just a message that says when it created the get all categories, that was a view. It says that doesn't have a primary key. I wasn't able to create an entity key. So every entity needs an entity key, and an entity key is essentially similar to a primary key. It's its tracking. So as you're working with it, it can keep track of that particular entity and be able to do updates and things like that. So it says with a view, views don't have primary keys, right? They're not tables. So it was just letting you know I did my best job of, since I'm creating an entity and I need an entity key, but you didn't give me a primary key, I'm going to do my best job. And the way it does that is it picks every non-nullable field in the table and builds a composite key from those. And you can go and fix that and say, no, I really just want this one or these two to be my entity key. You can modify that. So what we've got here is here are three entities, and I seem to have picked entities that don't have relationships with each other. So let me go and I'm going to update the model from the database, right? I can actually go back and pull more things into the model, whether they were already there or I created them after the fact. So let me pull in sales order header and customer address so we can see a little bit of the relationships. So I click finish, so now I'm updating it. And now because of these new entities that I've pulled in here, we can see that there's relationships between them. So, for example, here's customer address. This is a join table between customer and address. Now, this is a join table because it has additional properties in there, right? So it couldn't create the many-to-many relationship. It can only create many-to-many relationship if it only has those foreign keys pointing back to the tables, right? So I think it's more typical that a join table does have some additional information like, date created or whatever other metadata that you want in there. So that creates a join table instead of many-to-many. But you can see it picked up the relationship between customer and sales order header. It did that by reading the constraints to find the primary key, foreign key constraints to find in the database. Notice over in the lower left-hand corner, I've got the view. So that became an entity, and it actually created there's one property there marked as an entity key property. And that's because that happens to be the only property in there that was non-nullable. So that worked out great if it picked the one that I really want to use. So I can actually use that just like any other entity. Now, the stored procedures aren't on the surface here. The stored procedures are defined in the metadata of the model. I'm going to show you a view of that using the model browser. And oh, here it is over here. Okay, so up here the model browser is giving me kind of an overview of the actual conceptual model, right, the entities in there. But down in the lower part, it's showing me what is in the store schema. So in the XML files, there's actually three sets of XML in there. One is the conceptual model, that's the one we see on the designer surface and work with and use in our application. And then the store schema is another set of XML, and then the mapping file is a third set. So this shows you what the store schema information has. So you can see there's the address, the customer. These are all the classes, the tables that I picked and the view that I picked. And it's aware of the stored procedures, okay? And we can actually, just not going to be able to get, I want to teach you everything, but we just can't do everything today. But there are ways in the designer where you can bring these stored procedures into the actual conceptual model. For example, the insert customer stored procedure, we could map that to the customer entity so that within entity framework, whenever we are working with the classes and we insert a new customer, instead of entity framework automatically generating the SQL to do the insert, it will use the stored, it'll execute the stored procedure instead. All right, so we can do that. That's called function mapping. So this is something that DBAs go, oh, so I don't have to expose my tables, right, completely. Right, so you can actually use stored procedures in that way. So you can replace all of that DML, the updates, inserts, and deletes, instead of having Entity Framework dynamically generate that SQL, those commands. We can use the stored procedures instead. The customer orders is a different kind of stored procedure. That's one where that's a query stored procedure that just returns results. You can do something called function importing, where add a function import. Oh, that this is complex type. I'm not seeing why this is not giving me back column information. I would expect it to be doing that. That's just me doing something a little goofy. What you can do is map this or do this function import, and if the results of that literally match the structure of one of your entities, then you can map that to an entity coming back. Maybe it matches that exactly. And then when we click on OK, what happens is we get it literally a function. So this doesn't give us like an entity in the model. It's just a function we can call. So it's very different than doing a query. It's just a function that executes immediately, hits the database, and brings it back. So we can use these types of stored procedures, whether it's stored procedures that return data, return a scalar. Maybe it's just like, you know, total, like sales order totals per customer, right? It doesn't match an entity, but it's just scalar information. We can even create types. So if there's it returns results that are shaped differently than any of your entities, we can create something called a complex type, which will just be a structure, and it'll be a strongly typed class that we can return data into. Okay, so there's a lot of opportunities. And we can do call, have functions that call update, store, update type of stored procedures. All kinds of things. So there's a lot of ways to use stored procedures in the model. So now let's pretend for a minute that when I created the model, instead of creating a database and doing database first, maybe I said, no, I want to have a blank surface, okay? And I had a blank surface, and I used the designer tools to build this model. So I did something like I added a new entity. Let's see, it's in New York City, so it's an apple, or in this case it could be an Apple. Sorry, such an old joke. I could create an entity, and I could add some properties to it. Let's see, what color apple is it? Defaults as a string. I could add all kinds of different properties here. For example, where's the type? Drop down, right? So I can define this as any type that I want. So say that I started with a blank surface and I created all these entities and I defined these associations between them using the tools. Then I could, this would be model first, I can right-click on the surface, choose Generate Database or Model, Now, what you're seeing here doesn't happen by default. This is a third, not even a third-party tool. This is a tool that Microsoft is working on that's on Code Gallery, so you can actually use this. This gives me more control over the database that gets generated. Okay, so I'm just going to blow past that. I've got it set at the defaults right now. So you wouldn't even see that normally. This would be the next thing you see. You would get a screen filled with SQL. And that the SQL client database provider knows about, has been updated to understand about Model First. Model First was introduced in .NET 4. A number of the third-party database providers have already updated their providers so that it understands that. The providers that haven't been updated, they'll still work with every other capability of Entity Framework, even with the new version. They just won't be aware of this, okay? So this is the DDL that's generated. And normally what you would do is you would copy it and paste it into an email and send it to your DBA or database designer, right, and say, this is kind of like what I'm hoping you can design for me, and then quickly run over with a big bag of M&Ms or whatever to their office. And then they can generate this. There's actually tools right inside of Visual Studio that will allow you to execute script also. So you can actually create the database directly from the model. So that's a very quick look at what Model First will do for you. Even if I had inheritance and things like that built in there, it would figure it out. I think it defaults to table per type strategy. So you can change that using that tool that flipped up that I said was not part of the RTM install. You can say, I'd rather have, you know, if I have inheritance, please do table per hierarchy instead. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, we can talk about that later. Because at some point I want to teach you everything I know, but I can't this morning. So that's a really quick look at Model First. How many people here can imagine using this instead of reverse engineering database? Great. Okay. So that's pretty powerful. And then, you know, for your sake, I'm going to see if I can get that up. That tool that I was using, you can get on Code Gallery. It's called the Database Generation Workflow Manager. So all this did, the database generation is done through a combination of T4 templates, code generation, which also uses workflow, which I don't even know how to use workflow. I've never used it before. But you can modify the template. So you can see by default it creates a table per type. But you can also override it with a table per hierarchy. You can do, there's a way to keep track of changes in the model so that if you want to regenerate the database. Right now, if you make changes in the model and then you do this again, you're going to get all new schema. And when you run that schema, you're going to wipe out your whole database and start from scratch, right? So in here, there's a way to do some change tracking with that. All right, so I just have to stop doing what I want to do, which is teach you every single thing I know, which I just can't. So that was a little bit about Model First and Database First. I think it's important to understand how you can get a model. There's also something called Code First, which is not part of Entity Framework 4. It's in a CTP, which is called a community, which stands for Community Technical Preview. Something Microsoft is working on. And this is of great interest to, for example, domain-driven developers. They do not want to start with a model. I don't care if I'm starting with a model created from a database or one that I designed myself. I don't want any of that. I don't want a model. I don't want to use a designer. I want to build my classes. That's what I care about. I write code. I want to build classes. So you build your classes, and even though the way Entity Framework works underneath the covers is very dependent on all of that metadata. Code First figures out how to get around those requirements and still work within the framework of Entity Framework. And still, so you can get the best of both worlds where you just start by writing code classes. You don't have to write an actual designer, but you still get all the other benefits. You still get to use Entity Framework. Does that make sense? So it's not released. I'm not going to demo it. Scott Guthrie actually wrote a bunch of blog posts on it a month or so ago, and that really got a lot of people fired up and excited about it. Pardon me?
1.0 has that.
No, no. What it doesn't. It's not even released yet. I promise you. I promise you. It's been. They've been talking about it for a while. They've been working on it. They're on their fourth CTP now. CTP 4. And the fact that it's called CTP 4 is confusing people because Entity Framework 4. They think it's kind of out there, but it's not. It's still Community Technical Preview. And that CTP has some additional cool things you can see that are going to be added to the API, not just code first, but some different things are going to be added to Entity Framework. And also, just to throw it out there, there's also something called M. It's the only thing left of what the project Microsoft called Oslo. There was also a repository in Quadrant. Those are gone. M's still being worked on. Anyway, just so you're aware of the fact, right now in its, you know, very early stages, M has a major relationship with Entity Framework and Entity Data Models, and I'm not going to talk any more about that. So, you know, we got started late, and I wanted to try to do this even faster than usual. Where does this model, we have this model, where does it fit into your application? Okay, so we have the conceptual model. Right, in your application itself, except for when it needs to actually execute a query on the database or actually call a save changes, except for those two times, your application doesn't care about the rest of the metadata. It doesn't care about the schema or the mappings. All it cares about is the conceptual model, the model in your the model that is the entity data model. And in fact, the conceptual model, for the most part, your application doesn't work with that, but it works with classes that are generated from that model, okay, automatically generated. We get code generation that creates the classes. I'll show you that in a second. And I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to eat into is it okay if I steal a little bit of the – I should steal it from Peter because of all the live meeting stuff, right? Steal a little bit of your 15 minutes of layover time? Okay. Okay, thanks. So you'll really be working not literally with that XML of the entity data model, but with classes that are generated from it automatically. And then your application logic works with it. You might have a repository in your application. You might have additional logic in business objects. And then you'll have your user interface. So the model is you know, you're not going to, like, just put the model in your UI and then you're done. Although when you're doing some really rad development, it'll feel like it's right inside of there. But really, in a bigger application, this is where the conceptual model fits in. And it can be your classes. Can be your domain classes. And I say can be because a lot of people will just use that way. It'll take whatever classes are generated from the model and say, okay, these are the classes in my domain. And most developers will probably do that, but people who are writing huge enterprise, highly split up architectures may say, you know, I'm going to use these only in my data access layer, but I'm going to, you know, do some other transformations and have a different set of business objects in my actual application layer. Right, it's just about how much you're going to be splitting up your application. And then we have the ADO.NET provider, which I mentioned, and the ADO.NET provider helps Entity Framework communicate with the database in the syntax that it understands. While we're working with those classes in the application, Entity Framework APIs help you keep track of changes to those entities, those entity instances. It enables you to execute queries and then also allows you to perform updates to the database. So you don't have to write connection strings and commands and all of that kind of stuff anymore. It does all of that for you in terms of actually executing the queries or executing updates. And when we write queries against our model, I'll show you that in a moment, all we have to do is execute our query, execute our link to entities query, and then Entity Framework will take care of the rest. It will do the transformation to syntax that makes sense for the database query. It will execute it. It will stream the data back as a data reader, and it will take that data and then push it out into actual object instances for us. Right? So it will do all of that. So all we know is we're writing the query, we execute the query, and we get our objects back. We don't have to care anything about what's going on in the database. We don't have to worry about how to write SQL or what the names of the stored procedures are, what the parameters are, or what the column names are. We don't have to worry about any of that stuff. So we're going to work against the classes. Let me show you what that looks like a little more. I created this. Take this one out of here. I created this inside a console app so I could just quickly use it. So when I created the model, the default behavior is that Entity Framework generated a bunch of classes for me. Okay? Rather than looking at the classes, all that code of the classes, I will open them up in a class diagram so you can see them. There's one that's a little different. Oops. There's one that's a little different. I want to pull that aside. So if we open up the address, well, one thing I want you to notice between all of these is they all inherit from something called entity object. You see that in common, except for the one that's off the screen. It's not. You see, they all inherit from Entity Object. Entity Object is part of the Entity Framework API, and that will give these classes the know-how to communicate with something called the context, and the context is what actually keeps track of the changes and allows us to do the queries and allows us to do the updates. Okay? So these classes, as you interact with them, and make changes to them or delete them or create new ones, they will be notifying the context, and the context will keep a list, so to say, of all that activity, all those changes, so that when you do say, okay, persist all that to the database, the context will have all the information it needs. It'll know, this field got modified, changed to this, so I need to write an update command for this table to send that piece of data. This is getting inserted. I need to delete that. So context keeps track of all of that. So inheriting from entity object, and we're going to have, if that bothers you, like, what do you mean I have to inherit? Every one of my classes has to inherit from something in any framework NPI. We're going to have two sessions about how you don't have to do that. Okay, so this is the default behavior. So all of those classes were automatically generated from us, and I'm even going to show you a little later how that happened. But there's one other class in here called the object context. That's one I was saying is the context. So that one was created from the whole model, right? So I have my model. My model has all of these things in it, but the model as a whole is I have a class that represents the whole container, the entity container of the model, is the conceptual model as a whole. And that's what that class is that is represented here. And it inherits from Entity Framework's object context. And the object context is that class I was saying that gives us the ability to do queries. It keeps track of all the changes. It does the updates. So that's what's automatically generated from us. And that's important to remember. We're going to be talking about how to do this without inheriting from Entity Object. And you're going to see all of this again. So now I have classes to work with, and Entity Framework understands how to go back and forth between the classes and the model. So in order to, say, I wanted to do a query, first I need a context. The context is going to be the manager of everything. I'm going to do this in C#. If anybody needs to see this later in VB, maybe during lunch or something, I can show you very, very quickly. I used to be a VB programmer. So I'm going to create a context. I'm just going to call it context equals new, and that's AdventureWorks entities. So I'm going to spin up that class that inherits from context and instantiate it. And then from there, I can define a query equals, and I'm going to write this in link to entities. So link to entities, is everybody here familiar with link? Link to objects or link to SQL? Okay, so link to entities is just another variation on link to objects, and it knows how to query against, how to query against those classes that I generated. So that's where I'm going to get my IntelliSense from, is those classes. So